Diabetes Insights, Breakthroughs and Innovators. The EASD TV podcast from the annual meeting of the European Association for the Study of Diabetes.
Hello, you're watching EASD TV. Now, Flow is the study that keeps on giving. To tell us more about Flow, which had some new results presented, let me introduce you to my guests. And we have Peter Russing from Copenhagen. We have Rich Prattley from Advent Health in Orlando and Kathy Tuttle from the University of Washington, you know, the Provident Health, what do we call it, a health system?
Right.
Health system. So who is going to start us off with just a quick recap at the beginning, you would, Rich, of what the Flow study is?
Sure. Well, just to remind everybody, Flow is the first dedicated study with a CKD outcome with a GLP-1 receptor agonist. We presented the results initially at the European Renal Association meeting. And what we showed was a 24% reduction in a composite kidney outcome. We also showed that the decrease in GFR was less with semaglutide-treated patients compared to usual care. We showed an 18% reduction in MACE events.
And
we
also remind people who are not into that, what are MACE?
Major adverse cardiovascular events. So this is CV death, MIs, and stroke. And then finally, we showed a 20% reduction in total mortality. So overall, Flow was very positive. And what we'd like to say is we're saving hearts, kidneys, and lives.
Which is a great line. And these are extraordinary effect sizes.
Yeah, I think this is very interesting. We have seen in the past data, first on glucose, then on obesity, weight control. Then we saw cardiovascular benefit and GLP-1 receptor agonists were recommended in guidelines for management of chronic kidney disease because of the glucose lowering effect, because of the cardiovascular benefit. But we were lacking data on kidney outcomes. And that's what we have from Flow. And as you say, it's really remarkable. It's on top of what's already given, meaning antihypertensive treatment that was maximally tolerated, RAS blockade, ACE inhibitors or angiotensin II receptor blockers. Then you were randomized to GLP-1 receptor agonist, semaglutide or placebo. And then you see these very nice benefits. So that's really interesting data. And as we have also shown in subsequent analysis, that if you are on an SGLT2 inhibitor, which we also know is good for kidney disease in people with diabetes and chronic kidney disease, well, then you also see this benefit. So there seems to be additive effects of the different treatments, maybe because they work on different mechanisms, but really important, significant, large effects on kidney outcomes. So yes, a study that keeps giving.
Now, these two are diabetologists. You're our resident kidney specialist here, Kathy. So as a renal specialist, how do these results impact what you do?
This is the biggest one yet for people with diabetes and kidney disease. I'll just cut to the chase. Because of everything that my colleagues have said, plus they get the metabolic benefits, which we should not underestimate in the population with chronic kidney disease. We still need good management of glucose and body weight. Obesity is a major problem in the CKD population and contributes to many complications, including kidney disease. And then we get the full package on top of the metabolic benefits, survival benefits. Benefits on the cardiovascular complications that kill most people with kidney disease. And among the living, we prevent kidney failure. So it really is a remarkable landmark trial. And I guess the other thing that I would add is that the benefits on the kidney outcomes, on the heart outcomes, and on the mortality outcomes hold across different levels of severity of CKD. So we've really filled in the portfolio of trials. We know from the glycemic trials, the weight trials, the cardiovascular trials, that there's evidence for benefit in earlier stages, and now we have benefit all the way to the most severe stages of kidney disease. So this really is quite remarkable because it really is a highly effective treatment, even with advanced CKD. So, it really is a landmark trial, and it will be absolutely practice-changing.
And if I could just add, what impressed me as a diabetologist was the high risk in this patient population. Kathy sees this in her practice every day, but it's cardiovascular events, it's progression of chronic kidney disease, of course, which you would expect. And it's also things like heart failure. And we recently showed that semaglutide reduced the risk of incident heart failure events by 27%. So I think that's just remarkable in terms of keeping people out of the hospital, keeping them away from these major events with a single treatment.
So what everyone will want to know, Kathy, who is watching, is when should you start people, your patients, with chronic kidney disease on GLP-1 RAs?
To my test of reason, again, we have to consider who was in the study. So we enrolled people with a GFR of 25 or higher. Now, that said, some people did have a lower GFR at enrollment because it dropped between screening and enrollment. And we've seen benefit across the strata of GFR. But I guess going back to the trials, certainly with a GFR as low as 25, but going upstream for the reasons that Professor Rossing and Professor Prattley mentioned, we could really even argue that for people with diabetes, these agents are highly effective in terms of preventing CKD progression to these later stages. So I really think that anybody at high risk of chronic kidney disease or with chronic kidney disease would benefit from these agents. But to fill in the gap, we haven't had many agents that worked in advanced CKD, and these agents do. And they maintain their glycemic efficacy and their weight loss benefits, even in low GFR patients. The reason that's really important is that's often what keeps people from getting on the transplant list. So even in advanced CKD, we often use these agents to get them eligible for transplant. But if we can also preserve their kidney function for longer, that's a real win.
Now, I'm going to ask you, Peter, the really difficult question. How are they having this extraordinary effect? Because at the beginning of GLP-1s, everybody said, oh, it's all about the weight loss. That's what's causing it. And then they said, oh, no, it's not about the weight loss because, you know, say you got a good effects on if people lost 5% of body weight compared to 25%. And now they're talking about inflammation. Is this about reduction of inflammation? Is that the key mechanism?
Well, that's a very, very good question. And you can say to the first point about weight, it's important to remember that FLOW was actually done with 1 milligram of semaglutide, the diabetes dose, and not the weight loss dose that have been applied for other trials. So I don't think it's weight loss that drives this, but it could be glucose, but probably that's only a minor component. It can be reductions in blood pressure. So there are different effects that we know, but inflammation is probably also very important. And then there could be other effects in the kidney, effects on sodium excretion that could affect intraglomerular pressure, effects on renin-angiotensin system, which we kind of have seen suggestions, but we really need to understand that. And that's why we are doing now a study called Remodel, where we are trying to figure out how it works. And it's the coolest study I've ever participated in, because it's with all the fancy technologies you could imagine in one trial, where you give semaglutide or you give placebo to people with CKD, and then you take kidney biopsies, you do imaging with MRI to measure fibrosis, inflammation, oxygenation.
He's getting excited just talking about this, isn't
he? That's really a fantastic study. And you'd measure biomarkers in blood and in urine and so on. So hopefully this study will tell us why it works. Why is it that FLOW is so successful?
What's your best guess, Kathy?
Well, I think Peter's right. What I would add is that there are GLP-1 receptors throughout the body, not just in the pancreas, especially for the EASD audience. And so there are many effects that are, if you will, non-metabolic. There are receptors in the kidney. They're mostly in the endothelial cells. But what's really interesting is that not all cells in the sick kidney are intrinsic kidney cells. There are the immune invaders, particularly activated macrophages and gut-derived T lymphocytes that carry GLP-1 receptors. So it may be that the effect is on systemic immune cells that then become either less reactive or less infiltrative into organs, I'll say the kidney, but this could also possibly explain the effect on the cardiovascular complications as well. but it's probably multiple direct and indirect effects, as Peter said. But in the remodel study, and we are all co-conspirators on that as well, we will learn a lot more about what cells are affected. And also, we're doing something called single-cell transcriptomics. We'll even be looking at what genes are expressed and changed by the intervention. So this is really a first-in-class type of study that will dig deep into the mechanisms. So stay tuned. We'll tell you more next year.
Rich, anything to add to that?
No, I agree with Kathy completely. I think we have to think about a common mechanism that underpins all of the dysfunction that we are seeing, the atherogenesis, the heart failure, the kidney disease, because it just seems improbable that all of these things would be made better through separate mechanisms. Now, we don't understand what this commonality is yet, but I really do think that that's why we see such consistency of benefit, is that we're addressing an underlying pathology and pathobiology that, you know, is very important with aging, with diabetes, with obesity, and we'll get some clues, I think, as Kathy mentioned, from the remodel study. But it's really one of the exciting areas of diabetes, I think.
And you can see why some people here are already talking about these drugs, should they ever be cheap enough, as being the statins of the future.
Yeah, particularly because of their pleiotropic beneficial effects. Now, in the future, what I hope is that eventually we'll learn which patients are the ones who will benefit the most, so we can personalize therapy. I think we're still a long way away from being able to do that. But what's reassuring is that if you take a group of people at high risk, like we did in the FLOW study and in other studies, you'll see a general benefit. So we have a lot of ways to go, but we have this great foundation to build on.
Now, I said in the introduction that FLOW was a study that kept on giving, and it has been absolutely remarkable. It's a really groundbreaking study. Did any of you have any idea of the outcomes when you started on this? I mean, of the extent of the outcomes.
To be honest with you, this was our aspirational goal. That's exactly why we set the testing hierarchy the way we did. It was very intentional. Now, we didn't know that, but we had reason to be very optimistic, and it turned out to be right this time. But I don't think it was by accident. It was based on a strong foundation of preclinical science, smaller clinical studies. So I don't think it was an accident.
I wasn't implying that it was an accident. But I know this.
But I think the cardiovascular outcome trials opened the door for us to find this. And the other thing that I would add regarding precision medicine is having therapies that work at a population level blows the door open for precision medicine. Because then we can look at responders and non-responders, higher and lower risk categories. Does everybody need every therapy, or do some people respond better to one or two? So I think the future in kidney disease is going to look a lot more like clinical oncology, where we do deep phenotyping, tissue biomarkers, and where we have a platform of therapies. And we have everything from people who are low risk and might just do fine on a simple ACE inhibitor. Other people very high risk may need all four of the pillars, as we call them now, an ACE or an ARB, an SGLT2, a non-steroidal mineralocorticoid antagonist, and a GLP-1. But then there will be residual risk among those patients. And that's where some of these studies, like we're doing that are tissue-based, will show us a new molecular marker that we'll target for higher-risk people. So this gives us the opportunity to move into precision medicine. We have to have therapies first, and then that's the platform that really launches us to the future.
Peter, what would you advise, if you're a regular diabetologist, what would you advise them as takeaways for their own practice that come from this FLOW study?
I think it starts with assessing or diagnosing kidney disease in your patients. We know that's very often forgotten. So measure albuminuria, because that was an inclusion criteria, is a risk marker for cardiovascular kidney disease and mortality. So very important to assess albuminuria and kidney function. And then, of course, GLP-1 receptor agonist, or here semaglutide, demonstrated, as we said, saves lives, saves kidneys, saves hearts. What more do you need? That's implementation. That's what you need. So I think we have diagnosis, we have opportunities, we need to take it into practice.
Fantastic. I mean, what a great outcome. I mean, you've got smiles like Cheshire cats.
We are pretty pleased with how things turned out.
Well, you ought to be pleased.
It was a great team effort, I would say. I think it illustrates the power of a partnership with both pharma companies who are developing drugs and academic leaders who have this vision of the outcomes they'd like to achieve. Plus all of the people and sites that participated in a study like this. You just can't imagine the effort that goes into something like this. We are, you know, forever grateful for our everybody who participated because it changes practice.
Kathy, last word to you.
Well, I think implementation is key. We see very low uptake of either GLP-1s or SGLT2 in real-world data sets, people treated in practice, and this is around the world. So we really need to address the barriers and increase access so that all people who could benefit receive these therapies, because otherwise it will be a wonderful academic exercise. But to really save lives, hearts, and kidneys, we need to get treatments to patients because they only benefit from treatments they receive.
Fantastic. Well, if you're listening to this, you've heard a very loud and clear message. Implementation. And thank you to all three of you. It's a magnificent study. Be very proud of yourselves.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And there'll be more from EASD TV very soon.
Thank you for joining us on the podcast of the European Association for the Study of Diabetes. We hope you enjoyed today's insights. If you did, go ahead and hit subscribe and you'll always stay up to date with the latest in diabetes research and discoveries. And if you'd like to dive deeper, you can find plenty more information at easd.org.